The Around the League podcast is about to blow your mind.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the League podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined, as always, by a room full of heroes, Chris Wessling, Mark Sessler, and Greg Rosenthal. What up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
How you doing?
I just noticed Wessling's wearing a Seattle Seahawks hat. I thought you were team agnostic.
I am, but it was a free hat, and I like the colors.
I was going to say, it looks like a guy that recently started working at the NFL can get the employee discount and said, you know what? I like that hat. I'm going to put it over my head.
It was courtesy of Bear Heiser, who has some kind of connection to an equipment farm or something.
We get a lot of random gifts.
Equipment farm.
And by the way, you act like everyone knows who Bear Heiser is. He's an editor for the NFL. And he just mysteriously walked into the room one day, into the newsroom, with a box of hats like they fell off a truck, and Christopher Moltisanti from The Sopranos picked it up and brought it in. It was a little shady, but I got a Jets hat, so it was nice.
Well, he did a nice job. He brought hat specific to our team, with teams that we like. He knew enough with Wes. I guess you could choose among any team.
I didn't want to take 5 minutes looking through hats. I saw one that was blue. Said that's for me.
It's like when I came by your desk and dropped off a Dante Stallworth Cleveland Browns jersey that I saw in a pile.
You know, that thing has been floating around ever since somehow, he stepped on Braylon Edwards' foot back in 2008.
Somehow it's in my desk right now, but it will, as it always does, will end up on your chair.
I think we have a Wynn Sessler Stallworth jersey trivia contest coming up.
No, I don't want Mark ever to part with that, because I love how much he hates it. All right, so let's get to work. So, K-Rich, how you doing, by the way?
I'm great. How are you guys?
She sounds under the weather. K-Rich, before the show started, said, hey, are any of you guys sick? And they were like, oh, no. And she went, damn.
You do have a special glow, though, after your Eagles the other night. You know, I got a tweet saying me, K-Rich is going to be tough to deal with at the office tomorrow. So I know this K-Rich phenomenon is catching on.
She is not even close to the most tough to deal with Eagles-related individual in our office, is she, Greg?
See, I am sick and under the weather, but I'm muscling through it because I'm so happy that in week one we had an amazing win. In the whole first half, I was excited and jubilant. And then the second half, not so much. But we still got the win. That's all that counts.
All right. That was K-Rich. Congratulations. Feel better. We're gonna need you a little later on, though, so just maybe drink a Powerade and maybe an energy bar of some kind.
That was a tease. We're going to talk a little Eagles
tease
later.
Yeah, so let's go out. We're going to talk a little bit about some bigger takeaways, big picture takeaways from week one as we move into week two now. We'll do the news with Crystal. We're going to do a little talk about some young quarterbacks, what we saw from some of the younger guns in week one.
Can we include Brandon Whedon in that category?
Oh. No, just
that's
not
a sore subject for Mark.
Wow.
It's just not that interesting.
And, of course, some Thursday night football talk. But let's start with some bigger takeaways on Sunday night, because now we have a Sunday night podcast, which people are very excited about. We did more instant analysis on the games of the day. But now that we have a couple days to digest it, I just want to go around the room and just see what you guys think, more like a big picture takeaway. We will start with a man they call the boss, Greg Rosenthal.
You know, I watched the Falcons and Saints over the week, and it just struck me how bad their pass protection was and how bad their pass rush was. And it's really hard to win in the NFL if you can't rush the passer and you can't protect the passer. And I think it's going to be a problem for Atlanta all year. If the Saints can get that much pressure on Matt Ryan and they struggled that much to get to Drew Brees, I mean, they really weren't near him the entire game. I think that's going to be a story that plays out over the course of the season, and they're going to have a tough time winning that division again. I think that's going to be a three-team race.
Those were the two concerns about the Falcons going into the season. They failed to get Richard Seymour. Maybe that would have helped. But yeah, I think Drew Brees had a perfect quarterback rating when he was blitzed. That's a problem.
Didn't it just look like the old Saints? You throw Kenny Stills in there and it doesn't make a difference. You throw a new left tackle out there, it doesn't make a difference. They kind of just look like the Saints that
they
you expect.
They look the exact same. We heard talk that Mark Ingram was going to be used more. That's not going to happen. Pierre Thomas is a better back. He fits the offense better. Sproles is all over the place. They're the same offense, except Stills is better than the third receiver they had last year.
I'm excited to finally retire the Mark Ingram is finally going to break out stories after this year, because I'm pretty sure that people are going to give up.
He might break out with a different team.
Yes.
Are we going to give Rob Ryan any credit for scheming up a way to slow down the Falcons in week one? Is he going to make a difference there?
I'm giving him credit. Why not? Bad Santa.
It's a win.
I mostly brought up Bad Santa only because I love the story that he went into the Uptown Dive Bar in New Orleans after the game, Miss Mays, and handed the bartender $100 and say buy round for everyone. And he got blitzed. It was pretty
nice. Ryans are very enjoyable.
I've been to Miss Mays.
That's great.
Yeah.
I've been to Miss Mays many times. Not a place you want to be at 4 or 5 in the morning. $100 will buy 100 drinks.
Wow.
$1 per call drink at Miss Mays.
$100 will buy 8 drinks in L.A.
Well, that depends where you are. It might not even do that. So, Mark, what did you think about that?
The game that I watched pretty closely yesterday was Jets and Bucks, and it struck me that
It seemed like you forgot.
No. I almost did for a minute. It was actually, I thought, an interesting game. Not necessarily extremely well played by either team, but especially not Tampa Bay. You know, over the off season, I took a look at Tampa and thought they got. I like their coach. They've got a lot of parts in place. This might be a team that can make some noise in the division. Well, they're going to need to come out this week looking completely different, because against New York, I felt that Doug Martin, especially, who I think is really the core of that offense, couldn't get anything going. Their offensive line was completely overpowered by New York. They don't have a tight end that you can put anywhere in the formation to add as a blocker to make up for the guys they're missing. Martin was completely frozen at the line. And the biggest issue, frankly, is in a division with high-power quarterbacks, Freeman just looks like he's flat-out regressing. On that opening drive, he looked confused. He looked completely lacking command. Now, credit goes to the Jets to some degree, but Tampa could not. They could not establish anything. It was very disturbing to watch.
I could not believe, and we talked about this a little bit on Sunday, but I just couldn't believe that Josh Freeman, in the beginning of the game, after an entire preseason of preparation, when the headset goes out in his helmet, they have to burn a timeout and get called for, I think, 2 delay of game penalties. It just was him in a nutshell, and it also... It makes you wonder how, you know, him being stripped of that captain status, what's going on in that locker room? Because you saw a lot of weird stuff going on the sidelines. I didn't think highly of the Bucks going into the season. I really could see them really falling off the table.
Well, they have a players-only meeting today, I believe it was.
Yeah, Pro Football Talk.
It's not even week two yet.
Pro Football Talk reported there was a players-only meeting. Some players concerned that maybe the captain's vote was rigged, which is something we always hear.
Oh, no.
Supposedly, it's always rigged. Coaches just kind of choose who they want to be captains. But these are not the things you want to be reading about in week two. They have the Saints this week in Tampa. That's a big game for them, because if they go 0-2, suddenly, you know, the vultures start circling.
Do you know what the problem was with the headset?
What?
They had circus music piping through it. It couldn't hear anything else.
The Jets are happy that you're talking about a different team when talking about a circus.
I said on Twitter last night, I was up until like 2:30 in the morning because I got home from softball and I was still amped up. So I'm watching film and I'm like, I need to go to sleep. Let me put on Jets Bucks. And it didn't disappoint. The first series, I don't know the last time I saw a 3rd and 40 situation.
Yeah.
The Bucks offense was one pratfall after another. It was 3rd and 35. The Jets declined a penalty, would have made it 3rd and 40. Freeman looked awful. Doug Martin had the worst game I've ever seen him play. Vincent Jackson looked great, but as Greg pointed out, also got caught from behind by a linebacker on a play that could have won the game.
And it's also a game in which Josh Freeman felt like he didn't know what was going on. It looked like a poorly coached team. You know, you watch all those sort of problems with penalties and not lining up. I always think, well, that's a team that's not really very well coached. They have a first-time offensive coordinator in Mike Sullivan, and they're struggling right now.
So last year, it looked like they were really well coached and disciplined. Is Greg Schiano's college esprit de corps type thing? Is that wearing?
Wow.
Is that wearing off?
I don't know that they were that well coached on offense.
Maybe they're
year.
Just getting youngry again.
Youngry.
They need to be fed.
They did have some Raheem Morris like traits in that game. Yeah.
I do think though we don't want to completely overreact. I mean, it was an ugly game.
No, let's
game,
do it.
No. It's like, okay. There's reasons to be, because they really, really looked that bad. But I don't know. Week two seems to balance things out.
Wes, what was your big takeaway?
Can I have one general thing and one specific thing?
I don't know. What do you think, guys?
Yeah, he's pretty good at this stuff.
All right, yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So
he has a piece of paper in front of him. He's prepared.
My general thing is we saw week one have 5 more touchdown passes than any week in NFL history. The majority of those, it seemed, came in the nationally televised games of Broncos-Ravens, Packers-49ers, Eagles-Redskins, Texans-Chargers. in the other games, we saw some great front sevens. Browns, Dolphins, both teams were just getting after the quarterbacks, looked great. Chiefs, I know everybody's going to say it was just the Jaguars. One reason why it was just the Jaguars, because the Chiefs played so well. Don Terry Poe was great at nose tackle. Justin Houston had a couple sacks. Derek Johnson was everywhere. Eric Berry was really good in the secondary. And the Jets played well. Their front seven was in the backfield all game.
Thank you.
The Panthers played great. They kept the Seahawks down all game until the conservative play calling came back. But the front sevens were great this week.
Is that your specific and your general thing?
That was my general thing.
Well, passing yards were up. It was a record week for passing yards. But rushing yards were down 23 yards per game compared to last year. And it wasn't just that teams aren't trying to rush. It was that they weren't effective. There was just a lot of guys getting stuck.
I guess it just doesn't surprise. It would surprise me more if this hadn't been the most, you know, crazy passing week in terms of touchdowns. With everything that we knew coming out of last year and what teams are trying to do these days, wouldn't it have been a surprise that it had been, you know, 10 touchdowns less than last year's week one?
Just two guys went over 100 yards. So that seems to me a little fluky. Could that possibly happen again?
Well, I mean, it's possible, but I think that these things balance out. It's a small sample size.
I think it's definitely every year becomes more pass first, but I agree that that will balance out. It's not going to happen on a regular basis.
So what's your specific one?
So the Vikings-Lions game. Harrison Smith, one of our Making the Leap guys, one of our top five Making the Leap guys. The NFL, since Ed Reed and Troy Polamalu are on the back nine of their careers, we don't really have a dominant safety. I think Harrison Smith could be that guy as soon as this year. I know we love Earl Thomas, too, and Eric Weddle's underrated every year. I think Harrison Smith could be the best safety in the NFL.
I think last year, I mean, I should say stuck, but they were actually enjoyable to watch. I did a lot of Vikings games on Sunday, and Smith stood out from very early on. He looked comfortable right away, and I think that's a position that it's like you either got it or you don't, and he right away seemed to be making plays. He changed that defense.
He was everywhere in coverage and in the run game, made open field tackles to stop first down several times.
Well, that's why we had him in the top five. Looks like we got one Making the Leap right, at least.
We did.
Because he's a big hitter, but he's really good in coverage. He can really do it all, which most safeties, even an Ed Reed type, is known for either his, you know, pass defense or his big hits. But Harrison Smith can do everything.
Well, we had Lamar Miller, too, and he's just been since pretty good.
Don't worry about David. No? Don't forget about David Wilson
as well.
One
more quick thing from that game. Reggie Bush, I thought, looked the best he's looked since he's been in the NFL. And the coaching staff used him better than any coach, even better than Sean Payton did in New Orleans. That screenplay, I've never seen him run that fast in the NFL. He turned on the Jets and beat angles on defenders.
That's another guy like Forte who looks stronger to me this year, too. He just looks thicker, and like his speed was something different. I mean, that play was amazing, that touchdown.
Okay, so I'll give you my takeaway. I mean, I think we can't make enough of what the Eagles did on Monday night. It's really possible it could be the real deal with this Chip Kelly offense. It was funny in that first quarter, especially in the first half in general, when they were just tearing up Washington, what was going on Twitter, what the announcers were saying. I thought Mark Sessler actually on Twitter best summed up the excitement and, frankly, hysteria of the moment with his tweet, 9-9-13, 31 teams riding horses, Eagles riding a spaceship.
Now, possibly a little bit of hyperbole in there.
It always goes back to spaceships with Sessler.
It is. It does, actually.
Or water.
It's funny you should say that. But yeah, so what do we think about this? Is this going to really work? Is this a revolution, as they say?
Well, you know, I was the only one that picked the Eagles to win the division here, not to pat myself on the back, but I totally just did that. You guys all had them last.
Thank you, Barry Horowitz.
Mark had them at 8-8.
Horowitz
Dan and
moves.
Chris had them last. So was one game enough to change your guys' opinion?
I'm a little nervous. I'm a little nervous about my 5-11.
For the record, I did pick them to win that game.
Yes,
and
you did. Good job.
It did change my mind as far as the division. I think they're probably going to finish ahead of the Redskins and the Giants.
And let's just say, I mean, okay, yes, they look great, but they didn't quite prove to anyone they know how to take care of a lead with this type of offense. Washington came very close to really getting back in the game. They did get back in the game. And number two, everybody's talking about this. How is Vic going to stay upright when he's running this many plays? By the end of this, he's never played 16 games. The way this offense is set up, it's like you have to play 32 games. I just don't see it. And the next guy in line, is he going to be able to keep the offense moving the way Vic has done so far?
To answer your question, if I could go back and take the Cowboys out of number one and put the Eagles in there, I would.
Yeah.
I would, because, listen, I think Dan makes a good point.
I saw his tweet. I knew he thought
that. Well, no, I think it's it worked. What we saw worked. The question is, with any team, if you lose a couple guys, you know, the Eagles aren't going to be the same football team. But actually, the second half, what it showed us, and I think teams are going to catch up to some degree. I remember back in the old Tecmo Bowl days, my brother used to play with like the run and shoot Oilers. You just go up and down the field. And I would wheel out one of the better running teams, and I would let the clock run out between every six-yard run.
You're that
and
guy.
I would eat up the entire quarter and just keep them off the field. The Redskins had a ton of turnovers in the first half. They were a complete disaster. But they sustained drives in the second, and it was like Philly was not the same football team.
Well, for the Eagles, I think it just comes back to, is Vic good enough? It's not so much the number of plays. It's the plays he's unnecessarily getting hit. I mean, they didn't end up running that many plays in that game. He missed a number of open throws in the first half and the second half, or they could have had more points. So he has to find a way to stay healthy and I think be more effective. To me, the game didn't change anything. They're going to be tough to deal with every week, but they're going to be very up and down.
The best thing about them, the second half that you mentioned where they let the Redskins back in it, that's the difference between Chip Kelly and most coaches. After the game, he said immediately, I should have kept my foot on the gas pedal. I learned my lesson. We're going to do things differently. This isn't Greg Schiano saying, I'm still going to rush the quarterback with no seconds left on the clock because we're Rutgers. He learned his lesson. You know, and I think that's Chip Kelly's most redeeming quality.
All right, so that's just week one of the season. We got 16 more of these in the playoffs. Very exciting. Crystal, behind the glass. Let's do a little news.
K-Rich on the headlines.
I hope you guys enjoy that theme music that you just heard.
Oh, it's there.
All right, guys. So starting up, Texans head coach Gary Kubiak announced that Arian Foster and Ben Tate will split the Texans' backfield carries. Now, if I'm a fantasy owner and he's on my team, I'm very disappointed in this news.
And I don't get that. I heard that, actually. I wrote a post yesterday, and one of our colleagues came up to me and say it ain't so. But it's like, didn't we all see this, the writing on the wall with this? When you picked Arian Foster in the last week of August, we already knew that Tate was going to have a defined role in this offense.
Well, you know who didn't, though, is probably 75% of people that play fantasy football that don't read every single, you know, news blurb coming out of Houston, where you think, look, if Foster's been that guy. But I just think it's a great thing for the Texans. They fell apart down the stretch last season against better football teams. Keep Foster fresh. The question for Tate, can he stay healthy? He's not proven that he can do that in the past.
Let's keep a little perspective here. He said for now.
Right, for a few weeks.
For now they're going to split carries because Foster's rusty. He missed offseason. He missed camp. He missed preseason. Ben Tate was faster the other night. Arian Foster's a better player. He's going to get his job back. They're going to use Tate like they did in 2011. He'll get maybe 8 to 10, 8 to 12 touches a game. But this isn't a situation where he's going to get more carries than Foster.
Well, here's the thing, though. In 3 weeks, if Tate is still faster than Foster and they've done it for a while and it's worked out well, then maybe Tate does earn that role where they're splitting touches, because you never know when a running back's going to fall off.
True.
Okay, Rich, what else is in the news?
All right, next up, a team that looked very, very sad in week one. Giants head coach Tom Coughlin calls running back David Wilson a marked man after talking about his little fumbling problem.
Oh. Little. Well, what do you guys think?
He has no choice but to play him, so what's the difference? I mean, they signed Brandon Jacobs.
They have no options.
You can't play Brandon Jacobs significant snaps this weekend. You have Darrell Scott, who's injured, not seriously, but Wilson has to still be the guy.
And, yeah, the fantasy owners, don't freak out about – well, you can freak out about David Wilson. Mark and I are owners of Wilson and our Allison Bree team. But he's going to get a chance to redeem himself. Now, if he puts it on the carpet again against the Broncos, all bets are off.
Who are they going to play if he puts it on the carpet again? Brandon Jacobs is washed up.
Well, and I was saying to Dan, I wouldn't be surprised if Brandon Jacobs is unemployed a week from now or two anyways. I'm not sure he'll even stick around. Wilson, what he's good at isn't going to disappear. I mean, what his abilities are and what he's able to do if he, you know, two or three times a game, long runs, breakaway, that's not going to change. But, I mean, Coughlin's just trying to get this guy to be a complete back, and I don't think he's not there in terms of pass protection.
Do you know who two of the most fumble-prone backs early in their careers were? Well, three. Tiki Barber, Adrian Peterson, Walter Payton. It's an overrated issue.
The Giants would invite Tiki Barber into the building to help David Wilson if Tiki Barber wasn't such a hated man.
I wouldn't let Tiki Barber in my house either.
K-Rich, what else is in the news?
All right, some Irsay news. Colts owner Jim Irsay is demanding better protection of quarterback Andrew Luck.
Tread lightly here, boys.
I like it when Jim Irsay just demands things, you know? From his Twitter pulpit. You wrote this post. I mean, he just kind of declared, or else. I wonder, what is the or else in this situation?
I like it, too. I don't think he's going to drop some hammer. He loves his coaching staff and his front office. But listen, like, what's not sensible here? Luck is the centerpiece of your organization. I think he was hit more than any other quarterback last season. They want to see that number decrease. That makes sense to me.
Did you watch the game? How did it look?
It looked like last year, like they dropped Luck into the middle of a war zone and asked him to not get tackled.
He was sacked four times.
Underrated topic is that Anthony Costanzo has been terrible
since he's been
in the league. He's been one of the worst left tackles in football.
And the Raiders went through the preseason with no pass rush in any of their four games. The first game there, they beat Costanzo like a drum.
I just want to say I love everything the owners say, including Jim Irsay.
The Mad Hatter, Jim Irsay.
Anything else in the news, K-Rich?
Last thing, free agent receiver Brandon Lloyd reportedly rejected 6 offers.
So it looks like he's going to retire, I guess.
Well, I wonder how reliable is this report that he got 6 offers? Because
this was a league source from Pro Football Talk.
Oh, okay. Because I thought it was because he was a locker room weirdo.
I think it's lawyer. We don't really know what locker room lawyer means.
He's a locker room weirdo. We saw that report where he's in the middle of a conversation with another player and told the guy, you know what? I just don't feel like talking to you anymore.
What happens if you are, locker room weirdo is accurate. He has been known as a locker room lawyer. What happens when you're not in a locker room anymore and you're not actually certified as a lawyer? Do you exist at all?
Then you're just walking down the middle of the street aimlessly.
Well, I was wondering what he did to Tom Brady and the Patriots to not get a phone call. So maybe he did get a phone call because they're pretty desperate right now for receivers.
Did he say 6 offers from NFL teams or just 6 offers?
Supposedly there's 6 real, not offers, but they reached out to him and apparently he's telling teams he is not mentally or physically prepared for the NFL grind. I mean, he's 32. He played 10 years. It was, an okay career. He led the NFL and receiving in 2010, but other than that, he was kind of a disappointment, but he's probably rich.
I liked what another teammate said about him when they were doing the story in the Boston Globe for why he wasn't going to be re-signed, and one of the teammates said, now that guy's just a different cat.
Is that all, Crystal?
That is all for today.
Thank you, K-Rich. Get your rest, okay? One thing we didn't bring up, by the way, only because we can do it because it's our podcast, we did not bring up Ndamukong Suh, his $100,000 fine. But I did want to just open the floor to Mark Sessler. As I was working on a post in the newsroom, Mark had a theory about Suh, about his plan, because you're a little, it's the saturation of the Suh news.
It's not, it's my wishes.
Yeah, what was that again?
I just was telling Dan that they're, well, and I think we all have these players. He's someone I would like to put into like a one-way rocket ship.
There's that rocket ship.
Where you
ship
light
again.
That like little fuse at the bottom with a match, and he's gone.
Can he take the Jets with him?
Right. We all have maybe, we can discuss. We all have that guy we want to put in that ship that basically you never hear from again.
And then my question was, are you sending him to die, to perish?
Well, I don't know where he's going to go, but he's not going to be part of the NFL news cycle.
What's going to happen is there's going to be a lot of debate, like, should we bring Suh back to Earth? And then it will be coming right back at you.
Do you think
harder.
We can get Ben Watson's opinion on that?
we should.
It's very Solaris-like. I don't know if you've ever seen that
I have
movie.
Seen Solaris.
Yeah, sequel. Throw Suh in there.
Is this based on a feeling, by the way? Assessor feeling?
No, it's a wish.
A wish, that's
just,
right.
It's a wish, so.
All right. Okay, well, let us know if you're going to try to follow through on that. But it seems dangerous to that guy's welfare.
Sounds like a Marvin the Martian skit.
All right, so we're going to be doing a bunch of, recurring feature posts. Maybe that's one way to put it. One of them will be written by Greg Rosenthal. We'll be tracking, in addition to Greg's QB Buzz Index, is that the correct term?
QB Index. Quarterback Index.
Okay, Quarterback Index. He'll also be doing a weekly post on some of the young quarterbacks, third-year pros and below. So maybe this will be a good time. Greg, we'll throw the floor to you. Do you want to give us any thoughts about some of the young guns of the NFL?
I think it'd be a good thing for us to talk about each week because to me it's the the story in the NFL this year, is this crop of quarterbacks, kind of how are they going to follow up what they did last year? And I'd really include five guys as the main guys: Luck, Russell Wilson, RG3, Colin Kaepernick, and Cam Newton. So I just kind of wanted to throw it out to the room. Any big impressions? We know what they did last year. We're kind of wondering how they're going to follow it up after 1 week. What are we thinking?
I thought last year, for the entire season, for me, the question was, who's better, Luck or RG3? For this year, the question is, who's better, Luck or Kaepernick?
Or just, can anyone stop Kaepernick? Is he just going to be in that top shelf of quarterbacks? Forget young quarterbacks, any quarterbacks.
I think so, because number one thing I love about Kaepernick, what I've seen already out of week one, is that, you know, they coached him up to operate the offense a certain way last year. In what we saw against Green Bay, it was a completely different strategy to some degree. And it's like he's capable of doing whatever it is they want to do to attack teams. And, you know, listen, people had some questions. Can they go to a pass-only kind of offense? Yes, they can.
It's unfair that Kaepernick has Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman, and Cam Newton has Ron Rivera and Mike Shula.
It's true. And I felt for Cam Newton.
Not for long.
I felt for Cam Newton watching that game, but I also thought, you know, there are some similarities between how the Seahawks approach things and how the Panthers approach things. They're both defensive-minded head coaches. They're both run-first head coaches. The Seahawks did not move the ball much for most of the day. They weren't overly aggressive. But when it came down to it, which quarterback can just make it happen and make plays on his own? And watching that game, and I've always been a Cam guy, I just realized, and I knew it from last year too, Wilson is that guy. It's not Cam Newton. I think you've got to give him some credit for that.
Is that your way of saying Russell Wilson has the it factor?
No, I'm not saying that. They both
that's what I heard.
They both have the it factor. But
I don't know.
He's stuck in third and eights after a couple one-yard runs too, and who's the one making that play to just a crazy improvisational play? I trust Wilson over Newton, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Better coaching staff, as you said. I also think, Ron Rivera came out and acknowledged that the Panthers completed three passes over 10 yards on Sunday, which is just a terrible stat when you have one of the most talented quarterbacks alive. I'd be really surprised if they don't really push the ball downfield. I feel weird basing anything on Newton's progress when he seems to be shackled by both the system and the personnel around him.
Who do they throw it downfield to?
Well, that's a better question. I mean,
Ted Ginn.
Get Ted Ginn out. Armonte get him on the field.
Edwards.
Give him a shot.
It's striking as a football observer, a football fan, a football analyst. When you watch the Panthers play 1960s football, we have a four-point lead. We're going to take the air out of the ball and just get really conservative. And then the next night you watch the Eagles, and on the first drive, Chip Kelly goes for it. Fourth down at the 20-yard line because he doesn't want a field goal. He wants a touchdown. And it's just like, as a fan, you're thinking, as an observer, you're thinking, one team is just so far ahead of the other as far as how to play football in the 21st century.
Well, it's like we spent weeks in the offseason looking at Mike Shula and saying, this is a red flag here. We know what this guy's about, and we don't like it. But it's like, you know what? Listen, 9 times out of 10, Mike Shula knows much more than we realize, and he's able to adapt. He's been in the league for a long time. But then he spits this game out, and it's like, what is this team doing? What are they doing with Cam Newton? And they have done a terrible job of surrounding him with talent. They basically bottomed out at wide receiver. I don't think D'Angelo Williams is a guy you write off yet on any level. He's still around.
But why are we basing the game plan around D'Angelo Williams?
Well,
that was
the problem.
Bizarre.
That's the problem. And it's like, you know, if you want to grow a quarterback, you do it the way San Francisco and Seattle has done. Those also, by the way, are physically very talented guys that probably would thrive in a lot of places. But Newton's in a tough position.
You know, last year, the team that seemed 1 year ahead of everyone was Washington. They didn't look like that on Monday night. Are we concerned at all about Robert Griffin III this year and that offense in general?
I say give him a month. He didn't seem right. I think he was healthy, but his mechanics seemed a little flawed. Obviously, they weren't designing run plays for him. I'd like to see how he looks a month from now and see if he's more like the guy that we remember.
Well said. That's all I would say, too.
Yeah, I mean, this is his preseason. I mean, remember Adrian Peterson, even out first week or two with Minnesota last season, he wasn't the guy he bloomed into even by week 3 or 4. Same with RG3.
Long-term I totally agree. You know, for this season, they're going to have to win games sooner than later. You know, they go to Green Bay this week, then they come back for Detroit. You know, you have to figure out what is the best way to scheme to win games as we're getting this guy better. It's going to be tricky for them.
One of my takeaways from the weekend, too, is that Detroit's much better than we thought they would be. They're a good team right now.
Okay, so we have a couple minutes left. Let's get a little bit. Let's do a little talk about Thursday Night Football. Wes, you can leave the room if you want right now. It's going to be a Jets talk. Give me your option if you want to go. If you want to stay, you can stay.
I have some things to say about the Jets.
We've got lots to say.
So we have a couple minutes. Let's get out there. I will say, as the Jets fan, I don't know if you guys knew, I am a Jets fan. I will say that a little hope crept into the room, which is very Jets. As I said last week, there are two types of Jets teams, the ones that are hopeless from the start, which is co-tight era, some Herm years, and then there's the team that you didn't think much of, and they suck you in and they bury you. I'm really excited. This is the one that sucks me in and buries me. So I have a feeling, I'm not saying they're going to win, but I think it's going to be a competitive game. It's going to be a situation where defense is going to be hyped up. They play well in New England, and I think the Patriots are still figuring things out on offense, and I think you put those two things together, and it's a one-score game.
I mean, last year's Jets team took the Patriots to overtime.
Right. And that was a bad team.
I think this is a better football team. And
do you?
I do, than last year. What the Jets are to me are what the optimists around the Jets, and Greg was one of them, that's what they are. They look like a good defensive football team that's still figuring out what, if anything, they have on offense. Because I looked at that running game, and that concerns me. Because you can't just try to scheme your way out of not having a good ground game by throwing the Wildcat in there. And I'm not just trying to poke
so
fun at the Jets, but that
it
was
embarrassing.
That was awkward.
It wasn't properly used. They pulled Smith off the field on his first NFL drive.
After two nice plays, too. The best two plays, Geno Smith, the entire game were on that first drive. Then they put in the Wildcat, ends the drive.
I laughed out loud when I was watching the game. I saw the Wildcat the first time, and then I saw it two more times, and I just kept laughing.
Well, concern me, like, Chris Ivory just looks completely in a fog to me.
That's one thing where sometimes the preseason can tell you a little bit. Individual players, he looked rough in the preseason, looked slow again. I don't know if he's not healthy or what.
Well, the only thing I would say about Ivory is he also had not a great offseason in terms of injuries. Maybe he's going to need some time too, but I agree that he's not off to a great start.
Hamstrings, they can linger.
I turned on that game hoping to be excited about Geno Smith, and I thought it was a discouraging performance considering, you know, they won the game. He got a lot of credit for throwing for some yards. I don't think he had a good game. I thought they pass protected very well, and yet he was sacked five times and hit eight more because he just holds it. I mean, he doesn't force the ball, but he just holds it forever and ever. And comparing him to E.J. Manuel in their first games, maybe it's the coaching, maybe it's the player, but Manuel was a lot more decisive, I think a lot better.
My expectations for Geno Smith were so low that he actually surprised me a little bit.
He wasn't
a dumpster fire, and to me that was he was everything you said. There were a lot of issues, but he moved the ball once in a while, which I didn't even expect him to do.
He wasn't a turnover machine. He didn't pull an Orlovsky. He was not an embarrassment, which is all I really could have asked for as a Jet fan.
What's Jeremy Curley's status? Because he was the best skill position player on the field for them.
Yeah,
they are really
out
trying to use
concussion.
Him, too. They seem to want to try to make him like a poor man's Tavon Austin to some degree. A very poor man's.
A vagrant's man.
Yeah.
So but Curley's out for this game.
That's a big loss for them. That's a huge loss.
It's a big loss. Amendola is doubtful officially. Gronkowski's doubtful officially. We don't expect to see either one of them. We don't know about Aaron Dobson for this game. Vereen is out. With all these injuries, do we think the Jets can go in there and make it a game?
Who's making a hero pick?
Not me.
I got the Jets last time.
Can they make it a
game? I need
game?
To think about it. I'm very close.
Can this be a competitive game? I mean, we talked about the offense, but the Jets' defensive line looked really good. Antoine Barnes looks like he could be a really nice signing for them. They have a lot of depth there. Even without Quentin Coples, there's a lot of guys that were getting a lot of pressure in that game.
Well, they're playing a much better offensive line. I could see it being intriguing for a half, and then as the Patriots are known to do, I think the wheels fall off for New York in the second half.
You know, I kind of like the Jets are they are going back to their roots under Rex, a little bit of an underdog team again, and they're easier to root for now than they were the last couple of
years.
Let's
not get ahead of ourselves.
So get excited because that's all I got. Okay, so our next podcast will be on Friday. We will talk about the results of said Jets-Patriots game. also break down the week two matchups and our picks. I'm not ready to talk about the picks because I had a rough week one, but I don't want to get into it. It was bad. It was bad. I will be writing the intro this week.
This podcast is the one that we're going to be pulling sound clips of with this little glow in your voice about the Jets on Friday morning when they've when the train has been separated into 15 parts and they've lost by 43 points.
I have optimism. I'm not like you and the Browns where you've given up all hope. I still believe in my team. But we'll see what happens. I know how it's going to turn out. Okay. Until Friday. Signing off. The mailman, the sizzler, the boss, K. Rich behind the glass. We'll see you Friday.
I got big blankets. It's like 60 degrees or so.
I just found out I don't have air conditioning in my apartment.
60 degrees in Greg's.
I'm just
seaside.
Saying it's cold.
Manor.
That's cold.
Greg has one of those houses with like a white porch wrapping around the entire house overlooking the sea.